Episode 11.
That's what truly defines what an automotive shop should be. If we concentrate too much on the repairs and forget about the people so much, then we may be missing the boat and missing a lot of opportunity.
Welcome, aftermarketers. Prepare to learn just one thing from today's episode and take action on your journey to remarkable results. Okay, Aftermarket Tribe, let me introduce you to the owner of Osceola Garage and co-founder of AutoShopOwner.com from Baldwin Place, New York, Joe Marconi. Joe, are you ready to share your remarkable results?
Oh, yes. Absolutely ready.
Hello, and thanks for listening. Carm Capriotto here. Please, please like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to the podcast on our website at remarkableresults.biz. Did you know that you can listen to all episodes right from our website or download for later listening? You can also subscribe via iTunes or Stitcher Radio, which has a great app for Android. This week's guest is Joe Marconi. You may know the name because Joe writes a monthly column in Ratchet & Wrench. He's been in business for over 35 years and owns Osceola Garage in Baldwin Place, New York. Joe's interview is over two parts. You are inside of part one, episode 11. Part two is in episode 12. Joe is very passionate about his success because he struggled through some tough times. He tells a great story about the day he realized that things needed to change. Joe has overcome those rough times, and besides being a shop owner, he is a business development coach with Elite and co-founder of AutoShopOwner.com, an IATN-like website for the business side of the industry. Joe says that being a forward thinker is in his blood. You'll hear Joe talk about his passion for the service culture, that having a strong web presence is critical along with social media and blogging, that women clinics are an important part of his service offering, and above everything, maintaining upstanding integrity trumps it all. He says your biggest threat is yourself if you're not doing the right things. We also get into a deep discussion on when a business may want to consider coaching. With all that Joe is going on, we've broken the interview up into two parts. This is part one. He was very forthcoming with insights on what it takes to be successful today to where he sees the industry heading in the next 5 years. Here's part one. Hey, Joe, the number of years, Bays, Techs, how you started. Give us a feeling for Baldwin Place, New York.
Well, actually, I've been in business for 35 years.
Wow.
And I've been in the industry since 1974 after getting out of high school. So even before that, my days of automotive go back to work with my father on the family car back in junior high school. So the automotive business is the only business I've ever known. It's been my passion and my blood for my entire life. Baldwin Place is in Putnam County, New York. I'm originally from the Bronx. So when I wanted to open up my own repair shop, what I did was I was looking around and I finally located a place that was kind of like 40 minutes north of the Bronx. And I went up there and I started my repair shop, just a couple of bays, a few bays. And in time, it grew into a four bays to a five bays to six bays. Finally, we outgrew that location. And we actually bought property in the building, in the property next door. And we expanded it to another location. So now we have two different facilities right next to each other. One location does heavy repairs, traditional, brakes, tune-ups, suspension, sure, transmissions, engines.
Yeah.
And the other one does strictly maintenance work and body weight service, tires. So I got two unique situations there going on at the same time.
Does the customer go to just one shop and then you split the car?
Yes. Yeah, we tried originally having two separate business models, but that didn't work. So then we went back to two facilities. They go into one, the new shop, actually, and that's where they get written up, and all the transactions for the customer's point of view happens in the new shop.
It sounds like a unique model. We can't wait to hear about it. And so, hey, let's jump into some of these questions that I have. I'm burning to ask you. Hey, what is one thing that makes a great shop, Joe?
Well, that's a good question. It's hard to define just one thing. I would say know who you are. Understand who you are in business. It's not about, see, what we do is we fix cars. You know, we do automotive repairs and service. But who we are as part of the community, identifying what our purpose is, identifying the customer, that's what really matters. It's almost like building relationships within the community, building relationships, people with people, friendships through the years. That's what truly defines what an automotive shop should be. If we concentrate too much on the repairs and forget about the people so much, then we may be missing the boat and missing a lot of opportunity.
What's one thing that has you fired up right now?
The future.
Wow.
The future.
Wow.
Yeah, because right now I'm in a situation where I finally got to a point where the business is running on its own. It took me a long time, but with my other work, and we'll probably talk about it later on with my website and the work that I do as a business consultant and coach.
Sure.
I have a lot of things going on, but I'm putting the right people in place, and the people that I'm putting in place in my company are actually taking the company to a different level.
So,
and that's what's exciting to me.
So the future, it's you're fired up about it because you really have a good plan and you're excited about it.
Well, yeah, because before, like when the first 10 years in business, I was a mechanic who happened to own a business. And you know the old expression, I owned the job. I didn't really know where I was going. My goal, my future didn't exist past that one day. In other words, I got up in the morning, I had to, do all the jobs, complete the jobs, repair the water pump, install the fuel pump, and my goal was just to get by that day. Now I'm looking, into the future, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years down the road. And when you have that mindset, you kind of put things in perspective and you get to a different place in your life. And it took me a long time to arrive here, but it's unbelievable working on today to prepare for tomorrow. And that's exciting. That's what getting real fired up.
Joe, do you remember the day that all of a sudden it clicked?
Well, yeah, that's a sad day because I fell apart emotionally. So, and that's a long story, but I'll kind of shorten, I'll give you the abridged version.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Most of us they know that we got into this business because we were great mechanics. And I'm not bragging, but I was a very, very good skilled mechanic early on. My roots, as I said before, they go back to the early days of junior high school. By the time I was 22, 23 years old, I was an accomplished mechanic, rebuilding transmissions and engines and doing anything that rolled on four tires into my shop. I could fix it, no problems. But what happened was when I went into business, I took that same mindset, that same strategy and tried to run my business like that. So for the first 10 years in business, I really struggled. I fixed everything. I was a great mechanic. There was no such thing as a car I couldn't fix. But when my business had to be repaired, I had no way. I didn't know how to fix my business. So it's one Saturday, lonely Saturday in November 1991, where I could not, I was trying to do too much. Trying to get all the jobs done. I had two guys working with me, sent them home early because I figured I don't need to pay them. I could do all the work. So here I am finally trying to get all the work done. It's late at night and I'm falling apart emotionally. I can't get all the work done. I just cannot get it done. And by this time, I built a business that was around me. I had to be in control of everything. And that alone put me in a position where it's just too overwhelming. And I was only in my mid to late 30s at the time. So here I am, a lonely Saturday. I fell apart emotionally. I actually couldn't get the work done at that point. So I go home all frustrated and disgusted. And my wife says to me the next morning, actually it was a Sunday morning, "So what are you going to do now? Are you going to quit? Are you ready to give up?" I said to her, "No." I says, I'm not going to give up. I don't know what to do. I said, "I don't understand it. I can fix anything." And then it dawned on me, wait a minute, I can fix anything in terms of what technically, mechanically. Then it dawned on me that I couldn't fix my business. I didn't know anything about business. So 11 years, I wouldn't say it was wasted, but 11 years of working really hard, 6-7 days a week, working on holidays, working through the night, you know, staying late, not really getting anything accomplished. That was the moment when I said to myself, you know what? I need to learn about business. I need to learn about how to run a business, because my business is broken right now. I can't fix it. And that's what the moment was. At that moment was the awakening, the epiphany that I had to learn about business. And that was 1991. And I devoted the entire 90s to really learn about business. For a time there, I put down the trade magazines. I could not read a trade magazine. All I wanted to do was learn about business. I was so frustrated at that point that it took me years to finally recover. And then, you know, then the business took off from there in leaps and bounds.
Joe, how much do you accredit your or give credit to your wife for helping you through this on that weekend?
Well, my wife, I always said my wife stood by me through the worst of times. When prior to this lonely Saturday afternoon, about 6 months prior, I came home one Saturday, and after paying my two helpers, there wasn't enough money in the checkbook to pay myself. So I would go home on a Saturday and I tell her the bad news. I says, April, you know, I'm sorry, but I got a couple hundred bucks in my pocket, but that's it. There's not enough money to give myself a paycheck. And she said to me, I don't understand, Joe. You have cars lined up down the block. You're busy 10, 12 hours a day. Here you are working 6 days a week. It's 7 o'clock on a Saturday night after working all these hours, and there's not enough money to pay yourself. So that was kind of an awakening, but I didn't get it at that point. But in spite of all that, I always said she had a hot meal and a cold beer always waiting for me, no matter what time I stumbled in the door. And there were times I came through the door at 2 o'clock in the morning after working. There were times I came in, I don't even know how I made it home, to be honest with you. I was so tired. I was so entrenched in my work that I would, at like 7-8 o'clock at night, I would actually go back in the back room, you know, kind of doze off for 20-30 minutes, get back up again, and start working again. Crazy.
So, how many people that are listening right now can relate to this? What's the percent? Now, because I know you're a business coach, and just give me an idea, because this is a perfect time to ask that question. Are you the only one who ever went through something like this?
No. I would say the majority of guys my age went through that same exact story. This is not a unique story. And I'm sure there are guys out there, the majority of mechanics out there who have who worked at dealerships, gas stations, garages, they're nodding their heads and saying, oh yeah, I've been there. I went in on Christmas morning. I went in on Thanksgiving morning to finish a job. They were, you know, I worked through the weekend. I worked through the night. So this is not uncommon. The very lucky ones, I know a few of them around the country that started their businesses because they were true business people. Well, they were lucky in a sense and fortunate that they achieved success a lot earlier because they were true business people. But guys like me that were mechanics and became business owners, we really were at a huge disadvantage because we ran our businesses as a mechanic and not as a business person.
Thank you for sharing. Great, great, and very, very honest story. Hey, what is a habit you wish you had?
A habit that I wish? That's a good question. I guess it's a habit I'm trying to teach myself. It's to be really, to be methodical with my organization every day, doing the same things that will give me the greatest amount of return. And I hope I'm making myself clear about that. In other words, sometimes I stray off doing things that really maybe I shouldn't be doing. So a habit that I would say I would really want to really acquire and keep would be one that I identify my strengths and focus more on my strengths and not my weaknesses.
Yeah, that's makes sense. I thought you were driving toward that focus thing.
Yeah.
So right now, today, what wakes you up from a dead sleep at 2 o'clock in the morning?
The same thing, really. The fact that maybe I'm not doing all I can focusing on my strengths instead of trying to do too much.
I get it. So your biggest strength as an entrepreneur, what's made you that successful right now?
It's knowing that this business is in my blood, number one. I have the passion, and I have to, once I learned to be a forward thinker, in other words, continuous learning, continuous improvement, once I adopted those philosophies, those strategies, that became my way to bounce into the future and to just keep going forward.
Well, one of my great quotes on learning is being a perpetual student. So I'll let you.
Yes,
you can have that. Exactly. I'll share that with you.
Exactly.
What is your biggest weakness then?
I guess my weakness is still thinking that that I have to have my hands in everything. It's so difficult, and I'm really. Like if I'm in this, I only go to the shop now maybe 2.5-3 days a week. But still, if I see somebody who's maybe not, let's say he's doing a wheel alignment and he's using the torches to heat something up, I have sometimes to say to myself, let me stop. And that's wrong. That's wrong. Let the person, empower the person, train the person to do the job and leave them alone. If I hear my service advisor, one of my service advisors on the phone, I have the tendency to maybe want to stay there and correct it. Stop it. Leave it alone. Don't let them make their own mistakes. I made a ton of mistakes. And if you try to hold their hand and give them a crutch, eventually you're going to turn them into a cripple. So don't do that. That's my biggest weakness, but I'm getting better. I'm absolutely getting better.
At least you admit it and you know that it exists. And, sometimes you can prevent yourself from jumping in.
Yes.
So you woke up this morning and you found out that you won an award. What would it be for?
Making that transition from a mechanic to a business person.
Ah, here he is. Absolutely. Number one. He converted.
Absolutely. And I know a lot of us, a lot of you listening out there, you can definitely agree to that. And you can actually empathize with me through the trials and tribulations of that process, of that transition.
I'm sure that's going on. What's the best advice you've ever received?
Well, the best advice, actually, it was to focus on my strengths.
Okay.
Focus on, stop thinking that, because let's face it, if you're in business and you're running the business, your weaknesses become the weaknesses of the business, but your strengths also become the strengths of the business. So identify what you do best. Focus on that, and then let the people around you that you either employ or attain, like a professional help, to get you where you want to go. Because let's face it, in that same light, the advice that I would give people is you can't do it alone. No great coach. Yogi Berra was once asked, "What makes a great manager?" And Yogi says, "Great players." And it's kind of funny, but it's true. No great coach, great commander, general, they understand they need great people around them. So identify your strengths. Don't worry about your weaknesses so much. Get a good team of people around you and then help them become great, because through their greatness, you will achieve your own success.
Thank you for that. Let's go under the hood. True differentiation brings value to the customer. What is your differentiation?
That's a real simple thing. I can answer it just by saying relationships. Build relationships. There's nothing more important in business than building relationships. We focus too much sometimes on our Snap-on tools, our wheel line machine, our Road Force balancer. Those things you need to have. The tools, the equipment of the business you need to have. But more importantly, the customer doesn't judge you or doesn't keep coming back to you by your physical assets of the business. You don't go to a doctor because he has a fancy MRI machine. You don't go to the dentist because he has all those shiny little tools on that tray. You go to him because you have your trust in him. So you build a relationship like a family, like a best friend, and it's real simple. It's real simple. Don't worry about the competition, Dan. Just do what you have to do.
Great advice. Talk about the waiting room for your customers. Any special amenities, features that make your customer experience really unique?
Well, it always has to be clean. The bathroom has to be impeccable. It has to be the best. It has to be, you know, something. It has to be a room that anyone coming in, women, you know, a man or woman coming in, they're going to want to use the bathroom with no objections. It sounds funny, but that's very important. You have to have a good presentation, good people at the front counter. You have to have, you know, amenities. You don't have to go overboard. You don't have to have bacon and eggs and you know, making pizzas all day long like you hear in some of these dealerships, you know. But you know, I guess bottled water, coffee, maybe a couple of snacks, but Wi-Fi, but nothing, and a clean area, but nothing really special as long as it looks presentable and professional.
What's the percentage of women customers that you serve?
About 65%.
That's about the standard from all the interviews that we are doing.
Yeah.
What percent do you buy via an online connection to your primary supplier?
Oh, I would say 90% or better.
You've got a lot of responsibility when you purchase parts for your customers. What makes you choose those parts?
First of all, you want, getting back to the relationship aspect of it, relationships with customers, relationships with vendors, relationships with your professional people, it all intertwines. So you're going to have to put your trust in someone that they're going to deliver the right part. They're going to do their research, getting the right parts. Quality of parts is a big concern of mine, major concern. And we're having some issues with many product lines with quality. So I want to be able to make sure that I have the relationship with my supplier that we can engage in a conversation and that we can meet from time to time with our people to kind of iron out any problems, issues, or differences. So that's got to be number one.
Thank you. Do marketing and training programs offered by your supplier play into which supplier you choose to do business with?
Well, not necessarily. You know, I think that you can, again, training, that's my obligation. That's my job, is get that training. And I will source out training, whether it's online, hands-on, in-house, which is very important. I believe in continuous training. A ball player doesn't practice four times a year. So if you're going to set up training for your people four times a year, that's just not enough. You need more training. So you got to get training and find wherever it is, if it's online, webinars, if it's you got to take your people somewhere, trade shows. So training is I want to see my supplier offer the training, but it's not number one in my book. As far as marketing, I want to be careful what I say here, because marketing, I think that you can use the marketing elements from a program like a NAPA Car Care or a TechNet program or Bumper to Bumper, but just be careful that the marketing is always in line with your branding, with your culture. So don't stray away from the marketing if it doesn't fit your branding. If you can use elements from a marketing program like roadside assistance or a national bump, national warranty, then that's all good. But don't just, you know, blindly accept a marketing piece or marketing program from a supplier just because they're offering it, because you have to make sure that it's in line with whatever your brand is, whatever your business strategy is.
Thank you for that. Is there anything that you feel your primary supplier could do to improve your business relationships?
Well, the only thing is more frequent meetings. That I would say is important to me, not just with me personally, but with my manager, with my technicians. And it doesn't have to be anything really formal, but a one-on-one with maybe the salesperson and the store manager to come down and just, because you know what happens in time, differences, issues come up, and you don't address these issues. And before you know it, you're calling the different supplier because you're fed up with something that's going on. Meanwhile, a lot of times, it may be nothing more than a miscommunication. So keep the lines of communications open. I think we really can go a long way with that, no matter what supplier you're using.
A great perspective on that and a good learning curve for all the supplier salesmen that are listening. What is your preferred way of getting training to your technician?
Again, I go back to, if you're a shop owner or a company manager, you need to get training everywhere. And you cannot just rely on a package, a six course or four course package that has every couple of months they're doing training. I think that one of the most critical things that you should be doing is in-house ongoing training in whatever capacity that is. If it's online webinars, if you bring in a trainer, if you have someone in your shop that's really experienced with maybe drivability, one of your technicians, going through procedures, policies, whatever capacity that is, ongoing training and engaging your keeping your employees engaged in that process is critical.
So you're in charge. You wouldn't go out to a supplier, your supplier, and say, listen, I want these courses and I'm going to go to a class. You just rather have it at your place.
Well, we do that. And that's part of the whole process is to say, I might go to my supplier, CarQuest. What do you have this year as far as training? Well, we have these four seminars coming up every other month. That's great. So if you like what they're doing, you sign up, which we do every year. We sign up for that. But that's not enough. You need ongoing training. And I think that we're missing the boat if we don't understand and adopt that what you can do in-house, a luncheon, maybe an hour after work or before work, it doesn't have to be anything lengthy, but some, you know, like this time of year with the season coming up for the air conditioning, have an in-house 1 hour briefing on air conditioning.
So you're okay with a lunch and learn?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How important is the warranty program that your supplier or manufacturers offer to you?
It's very important, but what's more important let me go back a second. You know, we worry about warranty with our customers. We know what we're doing. We know what we're offering the customer. We know how to position our company with warranties. So we'll do things that are above and beyond what the supplier may offer. So I need those warranties. I need the programs that we're involved with, the TechNet program we're involved with for the national roadside assistance and the national warranty, but I need a supplier that's going to stand behind his parts, and that's another issue where we fall apart in this, because we get a bad part, whether it be a steering rack or a fuel pump or water pump. I want to know that you put a water pump on a car that has 100,000 miles on it, and 10,000 miles later or a year later, the water pump fails. I really don't want to hear from the company that it's not going to be warranted. And usually they'll supply the part, which is okay, but there's also labor to be considered also, which is a big issue.
This is the end of part one with Joe Marconi. Part two is in episode 12. Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from another inspiring aftermarket professional. Until next time.